We're holding on Kuf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, we've been talking about the last couple of Mishnayos about a person wanting to give away his Nechasim before he dies, so now continuing on that general topic. The Mishnah says, HaKosiv Nechasiv Levonav. If a person wants to write out a shtar to give his nechosim to his children. Now, here we're not talking about a matnas shchiv merah, where he's doing it because he expects to die soon. But Ashbam explains, here we're talking about, for example, he wants to get remarried. Now, when he's going to get married, all of his nechosim are going to be under a shibud to his new wife's ksuba. He doesn't want that's going to cause problems for his children inheriting his property. So therefore, so he writes out a document saying that that my nechasim should go to my children, but I don't want it to go right now. I want it to take effect. He wants it to take effect after he dies. So he has to write in the shtar that the gift should take effect as of today and after he dies. And then, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, what it means is, in other words, he's saying that he's giving them the goof now. That, for example, it was fields, so the fields themselves they own now, but the payrus he's reserving for himself for as long as he's alive. And the reason he has to do that, again, because if he doesn't write mei hayoyim, he just writes la'achamisa, then it's impossible for the matana to take effect after he dies, because at that point he's not around anymore to do it. And so the shibud for his wife's ksuba would take effect. And if he didn't write lachamisa, then it would completely take effect today, and he doesn't want to leave himself completely without nechosim. So he has to write this double expression. Rabbi Yossi says he doesn't need to do that for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah. Hakosiv nechosiv livnoi la'achamoisai. Now, in this case, when a person wrote out a document giving his nechosim to his son, or for that matter, the Rashbam says to anybody else, here, by the way, you have one of those things where the printers didn't pay attention to the fact that the way that the Mishnayos are divided up here in the Gemara is different than the way they are divided up in the Rashbam. So the Rashbams for this half of the Mishnah are near the bottom of the Amud, because the Rashbam had them as two separate Mishnahs. Anyway, so he writes out a document giving his nechosim to his son, or for that matter to anybody else, la'achamoyse, where it's going to take effect after he dies, meaning again with this hayoyim la'achamisa formulation, or according to Rabbi Yossi, where he doesn't have to say mehayoyim, it's just enough to say, it's enough to say la'achamisa. Then, because now we're saying that the guf and the peiros belong to two different people now. The guf belongs to the son, or whoever it was that received the matana, the peiros still belong to the father. The result is av eni yochol limker, the father is not going to be able to sell these nechosim unilaterally, because they're written out that the son has rights to them. So if he sells it to somebody else, then that's impinging on the son's ownership of it. So in other words, he can't sell it completely. He can't sell somebody else the guf and the peiros completely, because the son already has the guf as of now and the peiros later on. V'aben eni yochol limker, the son can't sell it unilaterally either, when the father is alive, because it's still in the reshus of the father as far as peiros. However, the Rashbam points out, of course, they could both agree mutually that they're going to sell it. The father will sell the peiros and the son will sell the guf. Machar av, what happens if the son did go and sell unilaterally? So since the father to begin with only owns at this point the peiros, therefore mechurim ad sheyamus, then they remain sold. The peiros remains sold until he dies, because fine, the peiros belong to him. He has the right to give those peiros to somebody else. If the lekeach is aware that we're dealing with that he's only getting the payrus. If he didn't know that, then the ritva points out, of course, then it would be a mekach tos. But the point is, in other words, that other guy will continue to have the payrus until the father dies. But once the father dies, then the son is getting back the payrus as well. And the Rashbam points out it doesn't really matter for that purpose whether the son dies while the father is alive or not. So either the son himself or his yorshim are going to get those payrus once the father died, because he already owns the guf. And if the son died in between, then whoever yorshims the guf from him is going to get the payrus now as well. Because after all, the original shtar said me'ayur melacha misa. And if the son goes and sells the guf while the father is alive, then the lekeach is not going to get anything until the father dies, because he will eventually get the guf and the peiros. But he's not going to get the payrus because those still belong to the father. As far as the Rashbam points out, as far as what's going to happen if the in the previous part, as far as the father selling, there's no difference if the father sold the guf, if the father sold the payrus rather, whether what happens after he dies, whether the son who received the guf is still alive or not. Either way, the son or his yorshim are going to be getting guf and payrus. Here, where the father sold the where the son sold the guf, then what's going to happen if he dies before his father? That we're going to see about in the Gemara. So the first half of the Mishnah, the Gemara says, we said according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to write Me'ayur Mula'acha Misa. So the question is, so what if he writes Me'ayur Mula'acha Misa? How does that help us to make it that the Matana should be effective? You're saying Me'ayurim because he means that part of it should take effect as of today. The Gemara actually doesn't know that point yet. That means part now and part later. The Gemara just thinks it's the expression to use, and therefore it should take effect for sure. But how does that help? Hotnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin regarding a get, Me'ayom l'acha misa get ve'in a get, that if he writes such a loshen in a get, and says that it should take effect Me'ayom l'acha misa, where, you might have the kind of situation, he's not divorcing her out of anger or whatever, he's divorcing her because he wants to make sure that she doesn't end up having to be a Shemeres Yavam, but he doesn't want to divorce her now, he wants to remain married to her throughout the rest of his life. But the Mishnah says get ve'in a get, it is a get, but it's not a get, meaning that it's a suffix whether she's divorced. So for example, if she were to receive kiddushin from somebody else, then she would need a get from that other person, misuffic. The immes, and if the husband dies after that without giving her a real get, chaletzis filemis yabemis, then as usual, when there's a suffix, she's going to have to do chalitza, not yibum. She can't do yibum because what if the get is effective and then it comes out that her brother-in-law would be marrying her where there's no mitzvah of yibum, and that would be an issur arayis. And she can't just go and marry anybody because she might have zikah, she might be required to do yibum, so therefore she has to do chalitza. Anyway, the point is, we see over there that such a get with the expression Me'ayur Mula'acha Misa is a suffix. So why here all of a sudden are we saying that it would be fully effective? The answer is Hosam Mesap Galon Itzna Havi Uchazora Havi. Because the difference is when it comes to the get, we have to question, is when he's saying Me'ayur Mula'acha Misa, is he making a t'nai? Is he saying that? Is he saying it should be a get as of now? If later on I die, so Me'ayur Mula'acha Misa could mean if I die, then I want it to be effective as of now. So it's not two contradictory statements. Just clarifying, Ula'acha Misa. After I die, retroactively, I want it to be Me'achshav. Or it can be that he's changing his mind, that he's saying Me'achshav, and in addition, Ula'acha Misa. And that second possibility wouldn't work, because Ein Get La'acha Misa, the get can't take effect after he dies. So there we have the suffix, whether it's a T'nai or Chazara. Abul Hocha, but over here, and the point is, because after all, a get doesn't have two parts. She's either divorced or she's not. And when you're not sure what he said, then she's suffic migoreshes. But even the two possibilities of that suffic, there's no possibility that she's half divorced. Either we don't know right now whether she's divorced or not, but we know it's going to be one of those two. There's no other possibility. As opposed to avahacha hachi ka'amalei, but here, given that a field does have two, or whatever kind of asset does have two different kinds two different types of ownership, guf and peiris. So therefore, rather than assuming that he means to make a tnai or to change his mind, much more likely that he means hachi ka'amalei. He means to say guf akani mehayoyim. You should acquire the guf as of now, peir la'achamisa, and as far as the peiris, you're going to acquire them only after he's saying that you, my son, are going to acquire it only after I die. So therefore, better to assume that way, and therefore we don't have to say that, unlike in the case of the get, that's a suffix, because here we have good reason to assume that it is in fact two different statements, one regarding the guf and one regarding the and one regarding the peiris. Okay, so that explains Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about Mayom Alachamis. Next, the Mishnah had said Rabbi Yosi Yomer Einet Sarich. Rabbi Yosi had said it's not necessary to say Mehayom Alachamisa. Just writing the shtar is good enough. So why is that? So the Gemara tells you, Rava Baravua Cholash. Rava Baravua one time was not feeling well. Ul is the usual expression for it elsewhere in the Gemara. All would be in singular. Ul would be in plural. So all or ul gabe Rav Huna Rav Nachman. So Rav Huna and Rav Nachman went to visit him. So Rav Huna asked Rav Nachman, ask Rava Baravua whether the halacha is like Rav Yosi or not. Now, why can't Rav Huna ask him himself? The pashtus, the reason would be, we find in other places in the Gemara that Rava Baravua was Rav Nachman's shver. He was his father-in-law. We know famously Rav Nachman was married to Yalta, and Rava Baravua was her father. So the pashtus, Rav Nachman would find it easier to initiate such a conversation with Rava Baravua, his father-in-law, rather than Rav Huna. Anyway, so he asks him, so is the halacha like Rav Yosi or not? Omalei, so Rav Nachman answers back. How can I ask the question? Taima did Rav Yosi lo yadayna. I don't even understand Rav Yosi's reason, given that we said before the matana can't take effect exclusively la'achamisa. It has to be that it began while he was alive. Why is Rav Yosi saying ain't it tzarech, that it's not necessary and it's good enough to just write the shtar? So I don't even, if I understood Rav Yosi's reasoning, then I could ask, well, do we accept that la'halacha? But I don't even understand his reasoning. Halacha, do you want me to ask him whether the halacha is like him? Why, what's the point of asking? So Rav Huna tells him, don't worry about that. At boy mine, you ask him, I halacha iloi, you ask him, will you ask Yishver whether the halacha is like a B.I.C. or not? He'll tell you one way or the other. But time, man, as far as the reason, I know I'm in halacha, I'll be able to explain it to you. We could assume maybe Rava Baravua was very sick, and therefore it's like, you know, he himself is not really going to be able to engage in a lengthy discussion, so it's not like Rav Nachman could ask Rava Baravua himself what Rav Yosi's reason is. So Rav Huna is telling him, in effect, we haven't got much time, better ask him before he passes away, and we won't have a chance to ask him at all, and as far as to find out the reason, we'll have more time later, and I'll explain it to you. Sure enough, Rav Nachman asked Rav Baravua, Omalei, so he tells him, Hochi Amar Rav, Halacha Kerav Yosi. This is what Rav said, the halacha is like the halacha is like Rav Yosi. Bosu Dinofku, after they left Rav Baravua's house, Omalei, so Rav Huna explains to Rav Nachman, Hainu Taimid Rav Yosi, you want to know what Rav Yosi's reason is, now that you know the halacha is like him, I'll explain to you what Rav Yosi is thinking of in the first place. De Omar, he holds Zmane Shel Shtar Mechiach Olav. The date that's in the shtar demonstrates when you want it to take effect. Because otherwise, what would be the point of writing a date on the, what would be the point of writing the date on the shtar in the first place? So therefore, putting the date itself implies that you want it to take effect as of today. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi says it's not necessary to write mehayurim. And in fact, Tani Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, exactly that. Rabbi Yosi and Enet Sarech, Vibneshes Manish Oshtar Mechiach Olam. Now, the Rashbam points out like this. We're saying over here the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. We're saying that Rav said the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. We find in the Gemara in Gittin that the Gemara deals over there with some of the details of the nusach of a get. Now, most of the nusach of a get is pretty standardized. Of course, you have every get is different as far as the husband and wife's names and the various other details. But in what's called the toifes of the get, the form, the boilerplate of the get, you have what the Gemara says that Rav said that you should write in the get the words min yoyma denan, that the get takes effect from this day, or the olam and forever. So the olam, the Gemara explains that's in order to say that you're not trying to put a time limit on it, which that would prevent the get from taking effect. But why put min yoyma denan? The Gemara explains over there because Rav wants to say, not like Rabbi Yossi, who says that zmanish hashtam achiyacholav, the date demonstrates when you want it to take effect. No, you have to write clearly min yoyma denan, that should take effect as of today. Well, doesn't that contradict over here then, says the Rashbam? Here, Rav is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, and there we're saying he specifically has us write in a get a loshen to imply not like Rabbi Yossi. So the Rashbam explains like this. It's not that Rav changed his mind. If he had, then the Gemara would have said so. What it means is, rather, by a get, there's no kinyan in the get. So therefore, it's just you the person writes the get and gives it to his wife. So therefore, and in addition, you also have arayas, so very severe things. So therefore, we want to make sure that the get is written with all the details so that there's no question when it took effect. Here we're talking about by dinim mominus, then the halacha can well be like Rabbi Yossi. Because in fact we could say, when does Rav say that zmanish hashtar mechiyach olav, and therefore that you don't have to write mehayoyim, would be when there's a kinyan in the shtar, and therefore you have every right to assume that the matana or whatever it is that's in the shtar took effect as of when the kinyan was done. So now the Rashbam goes on to point out that he brings from the Geonim that they said that actually in their yeshivas, in the yeshivas of the Geonim, they would actually always write mehayoyim even in shtaris of dinim mominus. Because they have the minhag to do that. So the Rashbam says actually that also demonstrates that really the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Otherwise, why would they say the minhag is to do like that? We would just say that the halacha is that you have to do that. So all it is because the sugya over here is going to continue analyzing Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So therefore, they figured people are going to think the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, better they should put the word mehayoyim in all kinds of shtaris. So the bottom line is, and Rav Nachman and all Gemara also accepted that the halacha from Rav Nachman, from Rav Baravoy, he heard from him, the halacha is like Rav Yossi, and we know the halacha is like Rav Nachman and Dinei Mominus. So all told then, the fact is the halacha isn't Dinei Mominus like Rav Yossi. Nevertheless, the Goyim are saying the minhag is to write mehayoyim in such shtoris as well. I mean, there is also the consideration, after all, that in Gittin, you anyway have a Takanas Chachamim to write the date in a get, for reasons that the Gemara mentions in Gittin and here and there and other places. So the Yad Ramah points out that the Yad Ramah points out another consideration as well, another distinction, he says, between a get and the kind of shtaris we're talking about over here. There's a halacha we just talked about in Ein Yaakov as well, that after a woman gets divorced or widowed or anything, she has to wait 3 months before she remarries, and that's 3 months in the case of a get counts from when the get is written. So therefore, you have to make it clear by the get that it actually takes effect behayoyim. Otherwise, you're going to think that he wrote an earlier date just in order that the 3 months can count from there. So you need to do that. But that kind of consideration wouldn't necessarily apply to other shtaris. And there is also the consideration that by a get, anyway, you have a takanas chachamim, that you have to write a date in the get. And therefore, that would be another reason to say that even though, just because you have a date in the get doesn't mean that, uh, doesn't mean necessarily that he meant it to take effect as of today, as opposed to with a shtar where there's no requirement to write a get, where there's no requirement to write a date in it, and therefore we can say that the date shows that he wanted it to take effect as of today. So the Rashba points out that distinction. And he also says that therefore if the common minhag in a certain place is that shtaris always have a date on it, then fine, it's true, it's not a requirement to write it, but the very fact that they wrote it without him saying, well, you know what, in this case, don't write it, still shows that like Rabbi Yosi, that zmanish or shtar mechia cholov. Nevertheless, as the Rashbam says, the goyim already were in the habit of writing mehayoyim even in such shtaris, even though the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. So the Gemara continues. Bomine Rova min Rav Nachman. So now Rova asks Rav Nachman, fine. So we've established the halacha is like Rav Yosi, and that the reason is because Zmanish or Shtar Mechia Cholov, the date in the Shtar demonstrates when he wanted to take effect. What about Rova asks Rav Nachman, Hakna Mahu? What about if Bahakna Mahu? What would happen if the Shtar has also mentioned in it that there was a Kinyan Sudr? That there was a Kinyan Sudr, but it doesn't say Mehayoyim. Would Rav Yehuda accept such a shtar or not? Would he say no because it doesn't say Mehayoyim, or maybe it's different in this case because there's a Kinyan, and therefore you can say that, and because the difference is, as we talked about previously, you can have the shtar itself can be the method of Kinyan, because after all, fields and other real estate can be acquired with a shtar. So that would be why Rabbi Yehuda insists that you have to say Mehayoyim. But when there's a Kinyan in it, it's not necessary, because then it means the field has been given over using a Kinyan Sudr, and the Shtar is there only as a proof of it. So therefore, maybe Rabbi Yehuda would accept such a Shtar, or maybe not. So Rav Nachman says, as a matter of fact, you're right. You don't need to. As a matter of fact, when there's a hakna, then you don't need to. You don't need to write mehayoyim. So you don't need to write mehayoyim. And in fact, the Rashbam says this is also a proof for, this is also a proof for what the Gaonim say, that the minhag is like Rabbi Yehuda, because, if the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, as we said, but nevertheless, if the very fact that the Gemara is continuing to ask, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what would be the din in such and such a case, then that itself implies that we still should be choshish for Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, which is why it's a good thing to write in a shtar mehayoyim and avoid all those problems. So now the question is, do you need mehayoyim? Well, there's a kinyan. So Rav Nachman says, Bakna in its sort of, when there's a hakna, when there's a kinyan in the shtar, then you don't need. Rav Papi says it's actually not so simple. There are actually different kinds of kinyonim for that purpose. One kind that you will need to say mehayoyim according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the other kind that you won't need to. Namely like this. If earlier in the shtar it says akniye, that the giver was being makna to the makabel through with a kinyan, akniye, he was makna to him with edim, and then at the end of the shtar it says v'kaneinu mine, we made a kinyan from him, then loit sarich, then you don't need to write mehayoyim, because then you have like this. Now we're going to learn in the last parak of our Masechta, we're going to learn basic rules of writing a shtar. One of those rules is that you're always supposed to write on the last line of the shtar a summary of what the shtar is all about. So if you say at the beginning of the shtar akniye, he was makna to him, and then at the end v'kanena, then that means that we use a different word for kanena rather than akniye, it means in effect we have two kinyonim over here. He was makna and we were koina from him. And that second kinyon is meant as a yipui koyach, like we talked about yesterday, to make his position stronger, to make it that it should be mehayoyim. So therefore, you wouldn't need to say mehayoyim. But if it was the other way around, a kanena mine the akniye, but if it's the other way around, if first the shtar says we were koina from him, and then at the end and last line it says akniye, he was makne it, then That's not mashma two different kinyonim. Then that just means how did the kinyonim minay happen? How were we kinyon from him? Is because he was machna to them. So therefore, in that case, then you only have, in effect, one kinyon in the shtar. And the fact that it's repeated is just to summarize the shtar like you're supposed to. And then we're going to learn in the last paragraph, by the way, why you need to do that. Why you need to repeat it on the last line. But anyway, the point is that then you only have, in effect, one kinyon in the shtar. That's the Rashbam's preferred explanation. Then he brings a possible explanation, but which he rejects. He says the Ein Lefarish, it doesn't mean that it says one after the other. The Akniyev Koninimine, because then there actually wouldn't be why is the Gemara making a distinction between whether it says and in one order or the other, it should make the distinction whether it says two lashonas or one. So therefore, that must mean it doesn't matter. So therefore, it means always you're going to have two. It's going to mean one's going to be at the beginning of the shtar, the other's going to be at the end of the shtar. But the question is which comes first and which comes second. So again, if you have Akniye, he was makna to him. And then later on in the summary of the shtar at the end, you have the kaneinu mine, then that means a separate kinyan. And therefore it means mehayon, but not if they were the other way around. That's according to the Rashbam. The Yad Ramah gives a different explanation. He says like this: the word akniyeh doesn't necessarily mean a kinyan soder. The Rashbam points out the word akniyeh would usually be in connection with. He would say that at the end of the shtar when it says the kanena mine, it'll usually say together with it the kanena that we made the kinyan with. Actually, this is the Yad Ramah's explanation. I'm mixing them up. Sorry. Okay. So again, the Rashbam had said that if it says that Akniye, he was makna to him, and at the end of the shtar it says the kanena, we were kona from him, then that implies two separate kinyanim. So it means one kinyan of the actual transfer of the field, and the other one to strengthen his position, and therefore he doesn't need to say me'ayoyim. But if it was the other way around, the kanena at the beginning, akniyeh at the end, then it wouldn't work. Now the Yad Ramah explains like this, rather. When we have the word akniyeh, he was machna to him, it doesn't say how he was machna. So it could be with the shtar, it could be with the kinyan sudr, it doesn't say. But when you have the word v'kanena, then that word v'kanena, generally together with it, you have the explanation, how were we kona? Typically the expression of shtar is, like you have an aksuba, for example, v'kanena minei b'mona de koshal mitni. We acquired from him using a keli that is suitable to be kona with, which the Gemara in Bava Metzia explains why you need that exact lashon. The point is, in other words, because there are opinions that you can use certain things for, or not opinions. The Gemara mentions over there, there's certain kinds of kalim, like very, very, very cheap kalim that you can't use. For a kinyan sudr, so we clarify that it wasn't that, it was a legitimate keli. Anyway, the point is, if he writes akniyeh, then that means already that amounts to a kinyan shtar. There's no need for a kinyan sudr after that, because the shtar by itself is enough to acquire the field. Therefore, at the end, when it says v'kanena, that we acquired from him using a kinyan sudr, then it means that it's a separate kinyan, and it means that he's not just relying on the shtar. He made a kinyan sudr, and then no mehayoyim is necessary. As opposed to, if we mention first Kanena Mine, meaning that we put over there the Kenyan Sudr, and then later on it says Va'akniye, also means that he's using a Kenyan, then it means that the Kenyan was accomplished through the Kenyan Sudr, and the Shtar is there only as a proof. So therefore, now we would need the Mehayoyim to say that it means that he wants the Shtar to take effect, and to begin taking effect as of today. So in any case, Rav Papi is saying, according to these different ways of understanding him, that you can't just say a blanket statement, as Rav Nachman had said, whenever there's a kinyan in the shtar, you don't need to write me'ayoyim, according to Rav Yehuda, because in fact it's going to depend on how exactly the loshen of the shtar is. But the Gemara says, maskif for Rav Chanina Misura, but Rav Chanina Misura asks Rav Papi on that, mi ikimidi da'anan lo yadin v'safri yadi. You're telling me that there's this difference of Lashonis, what was written at the beginning of the shtar, and what was written at the end, the Akniye and the Kanena, or vice versa. That's a distinction where we, the Chachamim, don't even know that. And you're telling me you expect the Sofrei HaDayanim, the scribes who actually write the Shtaris, are going to know that difference. Most of the Chachamim, says Rav Hanina, don't even know of that distinction. The Sofrim are not going to know, so therefore, how can we assume that in fact they know that distinction, and therefore that in one case you should have to write Mehayim, and in the other case you don't have to? It shouldn't really matter, because they themselves are not going to understand the difference. But the Gemara says, Shalunu l'safri d'abaya v'yadi. In fact, they went and asked the Sofrim in Abaya's based in, and they said they didn't. They do know this distinction. Or l'safri d'rava v'yadi, and they asked the Sofrim of Rava, and they also knew. So even Rav Hanina is saying, maybe the Chachmei HaYishiva don't know, but the Sofrim who do this kind of thing on a day-to-day basis, they know that distinction. And they understand the difference between Akniye at the beginning and Vekhanena at the end, or the other way around. And therefore, if they write it in one way versus the other day, that it demonstrates how exactly the Kinyan was done, whether it means there were two separate Kinyanim or only one, or whether it means that there were, as the Rashbam says, or whether it means that where there were two. Was there a Kinyan Shtar and then a Kinyan Sudr? Or was there just a Kinyan Sudr and no separate Kinyan, as the Yad Ramah explains it? Okay. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Rav Huna Bredi Rishuam, Bein Akniye, V'Kaneinu Mineh, Bein Kaneinu Mineh V'Akniye. No, it doesn't really matter, Rav Huna Bredi Rishua says. Whichever order they're in, whether Akniyeh is at the beginning of the Shtar, Kaneinu Mineh at the end, or Kaneinu Mineh at the beginning, Akniyeh at the end, Loit Sorich, either way, Rav Huna Bredi Rishua says, it's not necessary to write Mehayim. So we would go back to what Rav Nachman had said, that Akna Loit Sorich, that when there's Akna in the Shtar, there's no Mehayim needed, period. Not like Rav Papi's distinction between which one was written at the beginning and which one was written at the end. Because either way, when you have whenever you have a kinyan in the shtar, then it amounts to saying mehayoyim. And therefore, even if it says lahamisa, then it means it still takes effect. It still begins taking effect as of day, as far as it begins taking effect as of today. What's the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and what's the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi? Over duchran pisgomi to have an pona pligi, says Rav Huna Bredi Rishua, the machlokas of the Tanoim is strictly when you have a shtar that's meant only as a record of what actually happened. In other words, we're giving eidos. We want to write down on the shtar our eidos that a Kinyan Sudr was done in front of us. Not that they're saying that a Kinyan Sudr was done in front of us, but rather they're just saying we want to write down that he told us to write out the Shtar Matana, and we went and did that. So it doesn't say anything in it about a Kinyan at all, just that Pliny wanted to give this field as a Matana to Pliny, and he told us to write it down. So that would be that kind of case where Rabbi Yehuda says you have to write Mehayoyim, and otherwise it's not effective, and Rabbi Yossi says it's not necessary because you have the date on the Shtar. But, says Rabbi Huna Bredi Rishua, if you have a date on the Shtar, then it doesn't matter, if you have a Kinyan in the Shtar, then they would both agree that it doesn't matter, that either way it takes effect as of now, and we're not going to do a Papi's distinction about what order it said the Kinyanim in. And that's the halacha. Okay. Fine. The words, by the way, the Gemara, b'duchron, means the b'duchron is like zecher, like the remembrance, pisgomi, of the words, the havoban pona, that were in our presence. So that's the kind of shtar that it is. Pligi, that would be where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi are arguing. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had said, so that takes care of that then. So now we understand Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's opinions respectively. Rabbi Yehuda is saying you have to say Mehayoyim because otherwise La'achamisa, the get can't take effect. He doesn't hold that the date of the Shtar demonstrates anything. Rabbi Yossi holds it does. And we worked out over here that when there's a Kinyan in the Shtar, then it would work even without the word Mehayoyim, but you have under different circumstances, according to the different Amiroyim, what the circumstances have to be. What kind of Kinyan does it say in the Shtar? Does it have to say in the Shtar in order to make it necessary to write Mehayoyim? Again, the Rashbam had said that the fact is the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. You never need to write Mehayoyim anyway, as long as a shtar, there is a date. Only by a get do you need to write Mehayoyim. because of the chumrah of arayas, and because a get never, by definition, never has a kinyan in any way. When it comes to anything else, we would say the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yossi. You don't need to write mehayim. Nevertheless, given that the Gemara has just spent time over here discussing what, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when would you need mehayim and when would you not, that indicates that at least we should follow. We should be noyeg like Rabbi Yehuda, even if technically the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. So now, the Mishnah had said, Hakosim Nechosav Lemnoi La'achamoy. So, the Mishnah had described that, again, he writes a document giving the Nechosim to his son to take effect out, to take effect completely after his death, meaning, again, he says, Ayoyim La'achamisa, or there's a Kinyan in it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, or just there's a date on it, according to Rabbi Yossi. Then we said, it's now under joint ownership. The Guf still belongs to the Guf now belongs to the son, the Peiros continue to belong to the father. So, in the case of a field, it would mean the father himself still owns the field. It would mean the son owns the field, but he doesn't get the payless of it. If it was, for example, if it was an eved, then it would mean the eved himself would belong to the son, but the father has the right to to his work, etc. So now we have a discussion of Amiroyim on the following question: Machra ben b'chayav. What happened? Now, we said in the Mishnah that neither one can sell unilaterally without the other, because each one has a part ownership of it. So the father can't sell without checking with his son, because the son has the rights to the peiros. The son has the rights to the guf, rather, and eventually, once the father dies, the son is going to get the peiros as well. The son can't sell it unilaterally either, because because right now the guf still belongs to his father. So now, Itma Mochra ben b'chayav, what happens? Now, we said in the Mishnah, if the son does sell it, then we said, then and he's selling only the guf, because that's all he owns at this point. And we said the lakeach doesn't actually get anything until the father dies, because right now the guf still belongs to the father, or the peiros rather, still belong to the father. And by selling the guf to somebody else, then you haven't really given him any practical ownership of it, insofar as that he can actually get any peiros of it. So the son sells it. So it means it's kind of in limbo until the father dies. So Itzman, Mochra ben b'chayav. What happens then if the son sold the property while the father was alive? Or Mesa ben b'chayav. Now the son died while the father was alive. So if the son had outlived the father, then there's no problem. As soon as the father dies, the son gets everything. Guf and Peiros. Guf he already had before. Peiros he gets now. And now his Yoshim would inherit it. The question is that, we're saying since he sold it, then instead of his Yoshim, then the buyer would get everything, because he sold him whatever he could while he was alive, and the transaction completes after he dies. But now, if the son died while the father was alive, and therefore he never had the chance to get those, payers, so what happens? Amar Rav Yochanan leikonu lekeach. So Rav Yochanan says, in that case, lekeach is never going to acquire the property even after the father dies. What's going to, because to begin with, it never was roy to come to the son. Because the son had sold his rights to it before he died. So actually what happens is it ends up going to the father's other Yoshin. Now the son himself is not going to. So if the son hadn't sold them, then Rabbi Yochanan would agree that either way, either the son himself yarshins or his children yarshin, as we had earlier in the perek, the order of Yerusha, where if the son himself has died, then it goes to his yarshin. But here, what happened was when he sold it, he removed himself from the ownership of it. But on the other hand, he didn't completely own it yet, that the lekeach should be able to acquire it based on his koyach. So the result is the lekeach doesn't end up acquiring it at all, and the result is that it goes to the other, since the son himself, we're talking about, died childless, then therefore it goes to the other yoshim of the father. that Rashbam brings from the Gemara in Baba Kama, which also discusses this point, and it explains it like this. Rabbi Yochanan is saying the reason why, because he says, when the Mishnah says that if the son sells, the Lekeach doesn't get anything until the father dies, that would only be if the son is still alive when the father dies. But Rabbi Yochanan says, the Mishnah is implying that if the son died first, then since it never came to the son, then therefore the Lekeach is not going to get it either. Rish Lakish Amakana, whereas Rish Lakish says that the Lekeach is Kona. He would say the Mishnah is saying when the father dies, then the Lekeach gets it, and that means that across the board, doesn't matter whether the son is alive, whether the son is alive or not. So either way, though, the Rashbam is saying that it doesn't go to the Yoshim of the son, because the son himself, according to Rabbi Yochanan, because the son himself has removed himself from any ownership of the property, and therefore you can't say that it should go to his Yoshim. So instead, given that we say that it's not, the Matana can't have taken effect because he died before his father, then instead it's going to have to return to his father's Yoshim. Tosfos argues on that, and other Rishonim also argue with the Rashbam on that, and say that no, it means that it would actually go to the Yoshim of the son. So the buyers are not going to be able to say you look your father sold it, or you sold it, and how can you, Yoshim, take it away from us? It doesn't matter. That will work. Now, we're going to have, at the end of the next perek, in Kufnun Tesam and Aleph, we're going to have a Gemara that mentions that point, that if a son sells the Nechosim while his father is alive, and then the son dies, then his son, the son's son, is able to take away from the buyers, and in fact, In fact, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman explains that Rashbam and Tosfos over here are arguing, what that Gemara means, and they're arguing in view of another Gemara that we're going to have in a couple of days that talks about when a person is giving a matana, does he remove himself from it completely or not? So there are in fact different ways of explaining that Gemara later on, and those affect the meaning of the sugya over here, whether we're saying that the son's Yoshim would be entitled to it, as Tosfos is saying, or whether they would not, as the Rashbam is saying. In any case, that's a point of Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish says that anyway, the Lekeach is Koneh. So the underlying machlokas is Rabbi Yochanan Omer Lekona, Lekeach. Rabbi Yochanan says that Lekeach is not Koneh because he holds Kinyan Peres to Kinyan Aguf Dami. Rabbi Yochanan holds that the ownership of the Peres is tantamount to the ownership of the Guf. So in other words, whoever owns the Peres is considered the main owner of it. Because after all, what do you have a field for? What do you have an Evan for? Anything is mainly for the Peres. So therefore, since the father has Kinyan Peres on this asset, so in a certain sense, it's considered as though he actually still has the Guf. Yes, he had given the goof as a matana to his son, but in a certain sense, he really has a certain ownership of the goof itself. Not completely, of course, but at least in other words, to the extent where we say he's considered the main owner. So the result is that when the son sold it, and he died before the father, then when would the sale be valid? Only if the son ends up getting the guf and the peris. Here, where the son died before he's able to get the peris, then therefore we're saying that in effect it's considered that he never really fully owned it in the first place, and therefore he wasn't able to sell it. So again, if he hadn't sold them, then his sons would yaushin it. But since he sold it and he removed himself from it, and he never really had a full ownership of it in the first place because he only owned the guf and not the peiros. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, the one who owns the peiros is in effect mainly the one who owns the guf. Then therefore, the result is the sale turns out to be not valid. Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish says, Lekeach will be Koneh, because Rish Lakish holds Kinyan Peres, Lav to Kinyan Aguf Dami, just because he owns the Peres is not considered that he primarily owns the Guf, and therefore the son does have enough of an ownership of it that he's able to transfer it to the Lekeach, and therefore even if he dies first, then the Lekeach is still able to be Koneh. This is one of those cases, by the way. Normally, when we have a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, normally the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, but this is one of those three. This is one of the three cases where the halacha is in fact like Rish Lakish. So the Gemara asks, why do they need to tell their machlokas over here? Don't we already find Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish arguing on this very point about Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf in another context? The Itmar, we have a discussion between them. Hamurchus Sadehu Laperis, if a person sells his field only as far as the Peris, so again, he's keeping the goof of the field for himself, but he wants to sell the rights to the Peris to somebody else. Rabbi Yochanan Amar may be the Kurdei. So Rabbi Yochanan says the one who owns the Peris, the Lakeach, is going to have to bring Bikurim from that field, and he can even say the Psukim. He can even say, you know, you have in the Psukim that he says by Bikurim, you have the expression that I'm saying that he says, I'm bringing to you Hashem the fruit from the land, Hashem Nasata Li Hadama, Hashem Nasata Li Hashem, the land that you Hashem gave me. So we can call it. Rabbi Yochanan says that he's able to say those words in the pasuk because we can consider, even though he only owns it as far as the Peres, we can consider him the primary owner of the field. Rish Lakish Amar, maybe the Einik. Rish Lakish holds he brings the Korim, but he doesn't say the Pesukim. Rabbi Yochanan maybe the Korei Kasava Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguftami. Rabbi Yochanan holds that he can say the Pesukim of Bikurim because he holds that Kinyan Peres is considered tantamount to Kinyan Aguf. So therefore, in effect, he owns the land enough to be able to say Asher Nasata Li Hashem. Rish Lakish Amar maybe the Einik Korei. Rish Lakish says he would not say the Pesukim Kinyan Peres Lavke Kinyan Aguftami because it's not considered that he owns the actual that he has any ownership of the actual guf. Now the Rashbam points out he even appoints Rish Lakish he will have to bring the actual Bikurim because the Pasuk also, even though, so fine, you can't say that's Ha'adama Asher Nasata Li Hashem, but on the other hand, the Pasuk also says about Bikurim, Asher Tovi Me'artzecha, that you should bring Bikurim from your land, and to that extent, it can be considered his land, because he had a shibud on it. The land is there for him to get payrus from. That's according to the Rashbam, and the Marshal discusses actually which pasuk is the Rashbam, like this, the Rashbam brings the pasuk me'artzecha, that you have to bring Bikurim from your land. Tosfos actually quotes him as saying that the reason is because you can consider it admoscha, which also means your land. But Tosfos says the fact is that the fact is if it's ad moscha, then you could also call it Avdam Asher Nasata Li Hashem. So the Marshal points out if the Rashbam is quoting from the word me'artzecha as we have in the Rashbam in front of us, then the question is not such a strong one. Fine, it can be considered me'artzecha, but not ad moscha really. But if you say that you can call it artzecha, it's your land in a certain limited sense, but it's not Avdam Asher Nasata Li Hashem because it's not truly given to him according to Rish Lakish. But if you say that you're learning from Admoscha, then it should mean that in fact it should be considered fully Admoscha, even as far as Adamash and Asata Liashem. In any case, Tosfos asks on the Rashbam and says that no, Minat Torah according to Rish Lakish, he wouldn't actually need to bring Bikurim at all. But Midrabbanan, we tell him to bring Bikurim. Because the fact that he has the Kinyan Peres is enough reason for the Chachamim to say that he should have to bring Bikurim, but not to say the Pesukim, because as we learned earlier in the Masechta, the problem with saying, now you could ask, what's wrong? It's just Pesukim. You can say Pesukim anytime you want. The problem is Merci Kishikra. The problem is two things. First of all, Merci Kishikra. It looks like a lie. How can he say Hadam Hashem Asata Li Hashem when it's not actually his land? That would be speaking a falsehood in front of Hashem. And second of all, people are going to think that he's potter that he's potter from Truma and Meiser. Because of these Bikurim that he brings, people are going to think are potter from Truma and Meiser because the Bikurim themselves are potter from that, and they're not going to realize that these are only Bikurim because of the suffix, and therefore they should be chayiv in Truma and Meiser, and people may not realize that. If he's not saying the Pesukim, then that itself puts people on notice that this is in fact only Drabbanan, and they'll know that he himself and the Koyan will know, etc., that he has to take Truma and Meiser from them. Okay, in any case, so we have that machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, where the underlying points behind the machlokas are kinyan peiros, kinyan aguf, or lav kinyan aguf. So why do we need them to have this exact same machlokas over here when it comes to the father and the son? The answer is Amalach Rabbi Yochanan, Afa Gavda Ba'alma, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf Dami, because each of them is going to tell you there's a difference. Rabbi Yochanan would say, generally we would say Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, and therefore in the case of Bikurim, that would be reason enough for him to be able to say it, to be able to say the Psukim, Hocha Itzrich. But here you need to, I need to also inform you that it's also Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, Sakur Ad Chamina, because otherwise you would think, Abel, Gabed Brei, Achule Achil. Because after all, here we're talking about a father and a son, where he's giving him the guf. Maybe, in fact, the father is moichel to his son, and is moichel the guf completely. And therefore, maybe he's moichel the guf completely to his son. And therefore, so therefore, the father doesn't even have really the kinyan peiros. So therefore, so it's not considered that the father has any kinyan aguf at all. Kamash malam. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that no, in fact, here the father does have a full ownership of the peiros, and therefore that is tantamount to kinyan aguf. And therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yochanan needs to tell us that the rule of Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, also applies over here, even though you might think maybe the father doesn't even have a Kinyan Peres at all. But Rav Shimon Lakish, Amar and Rish Lakish will say the other way around. Afa gavda ba'alma Kinyan Peres, lav Kinyan Aguf, dami. In general, Kinyan Peres is not the Kinyan Aguf, which explains why the guy brings Bikurim without saying the Psukim. Again, either whether that's Daraisa according to the Rashbam or the Rabbanon according to Tosfos. So you're asking why over here do you need to also reiterate that? But Hocha Itzrich, but here you need a special reason to say why we would say it. Sakrad Hamina, because you might otherwise think when a person is selling to somebody else and he wants to reserve some rights for it for himself, then if he's selling and keeping for himself the goof and giving somebody else the payers, then you would say that selling the other guy the payers is not tantamount to selling him the goof. But when it's the other way around, when he's keeping for himself the payers and giving to the other one the goof, you could say that maybe kol agabe nafshe, when it comes to what he's keeping for himself, afilu b'mekayim brei, even when it's talking about relative to his son, nafshe adifele, after all, he would prefer to keep as much as possible for himself. So the opposite svara of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that a father to his son might be completely moichel, and therefore, even though he's reserving the payers for himself, maybe he doesn't truly mean to reserve them, and in fact, the payers belong to the son. A Rish Lakish would say the other way around. You might think that the father, even though he's reserving the payers for himself, fundamentally he's also in a certain sense trying to keep the goof for himself as well, and therefore Kamash Malam, therefore we need to be told that no, he is actually completely giving away the goof and keeping the payers for himself, and nevertheless Kinyan payers is not Kinyan Aguf. Okay, so that's why we need them to be saying the machlokas in the case of the father and the son. The Rashbam points out. Now the Gemara also could have continued and said that you could say the other way around as well. If you only had machlokas as far as the father and son, and not as far as Bikurim, then you could use the same svaris, the other way around. But the Gemara doesn't bother with that, because it's obvious that each one could use the other one's svara to say that Bikurim are different than a father and son. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan l'Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan said to Rish Lakish, how can you say Kinyan Peres, lav k'kinyan aguf, and therefore that the son is not considered to have any ownership of it at all, and therefore we said, as far as him selling it to somebody else, that if he sells it to somebody else and he dies before the father, that the lekeach is completely koine, because we're saying that as soon as the son has the goof, he has the right to sell it. His father has the payrus, but the father's ownership of the payrus is not enough to block the sale from taking place, says Rabbi Yochanan to Rish Lakish, how could you say that? We learn in a braisa, which we learned previously, if a person says, I want my nechosim to go to you, and after you die, I want plenty to yarshin these nechosim, so in other words, I'm giving it to you as a gift, but only as a life tenure, only as long as you are alive, and then after that it goes to a different person, then I want to receive it, and after him I want plenty. So mes rishon kana sheni. So we said then that if when the first one dies, the second one is koina. Mes sheni kana shlishi. And when the second one dies, the third one gets it. But mes sheni b'chayi rishon. But if the second one died while the first one was alive, yachzu in the chosim the yoshe rishon, then the chosim do not go to the third one because it was only acharecha. It was only acharev. It was only after the second one dies. And it has to be that at that point he was already zoicha in them, and he wasn't because the first one is alive. Therefore, it goes back to the first one. And if the first one is already dead, then it goes to his yoshin instead. It has to be. In other words, the sheni is acquiring it before he's able to pass it on to the shlishi. And here, the sheni never acquired it. Now, the im issa. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, if you're going to tell me, like you say, Kinyan Peres, Lav Kikirin Agufdami, then, Le Yoshai Nibarile, then what do you mean that the Nechosim go back to the Yoshim of the first one? They should go back to the Yoshim of the original giver. Because the first one, in effect, only has Kinyan Peres. Because he's saying that you only have it only as long as you're alive, which amounts to a Kinyan Peres. Because otherwise, only an irrevocable sale or gift would be a kinyan aguf. So in effect, the first one only has kinyan peiros. So if you tell me kinyan peiros for kinyan aguf, then you can say that fine, the first one acquired it as far as the peiros, and that's considered, now he has a degree of ownership over the guf as well, and therefore when he dies, then his yoshim are in line to get it, and therefore when the second one dies, while the first one is alive, then it's going to go back to the first one, and eventually it's going to go to his yoshim. Because the second one never acquired it. But if you're telling me Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf, then how is the first one being koine in the first place? It should go to him, and then to the second one. And if the second one dies, then the first one is. And when the first one dies, it shouldn't go to his yoshim. It goes all the way back to the original giver because to the begin with, the first one only had the peres. Amalei, so the Shlokish answers, Kvar Tirgum of Hoshia B'Bavel, you should know that Hoshia in Bavel already explained that that case is talking about Acharecha Shaini, that it's different in the case of Acharecha, because actually it's not just Kinyan Peres. He is actually giving him the entire Guf, and Peres as well. He's saying Acharecha Pliny, after you it's going to go to Pliny. So therefore it means we're not just talking about Kinyan Peres like you thought. We're actually talking about a Kinyan Aguf as well, and therefore so the first one fully owns it, Guf and Peres, and eventually when he dies it would go to the second one, and when the second one dies while the first one is alive, then we're going to say that it's going to go back to the first one who owns everything, Guf and Peres. V'chein, Romi, Rav Bar Rav Huna, Kamei de Rav, similarly, Rav Bar Rav Huna pointed out the seeming contradiction to Rav, V'omar, and Rav gave the same answer as Rav Hoshi, Acharecha Shaini, it's different when he says Acharecha. So there's no proof against Rish Lakish from that. But the Gemara is going to point out it's not so simple. We'll continue afterwards. We'll continue tomorrow, Motzei Shabbos, Bez Hashem, and say that there's actually a machlokas Tanoim on that subject.